Now, my topic here, media reforms in Zimbabwe. You may ask why media reforms. I think you have heard about that topic for a very long time. Media reforms, because whatever reforms have taken place, particularly on radio, which I'm focusing on, have not been complete. There is plurality, of course, because we have moved from one radio station or ZBC radio stations, and we now have other radio stations. But what we are discussing at the moment in these reforms is to ensure that there are more private players, because the stations that are there are mainly stations that belong to the government or belong to government parastatals. We'll get to that. But it's also good to contextualize, where are we coming from? What was the situation before? What road have we traveled with regards to media reforms? And where are we going to? Before independence, like I said, we had two RBC stations, and RBC and later ZBC had monopoly. And this was guided by what is known, or what was known as, the Broadcasting Act of 1957. So it was operational before independence, and it got into our independence and continued for quite a long time until other reforms came in. So with the African service, where I started off, and we've got with the European service, which was also known as the General Service. So at independence, as a matter of policy, we continued with those. And we also had some regional stations, but they all belonged to ZBC. You had a regional station in Harare called Radio Jacaranda. You had another one in Bulawayo called Radio Matopo. You had another one in Mtare called Radio Manika, and another one in the Midlands. So, but they all belonged to the RBC, and then later they belonged to the ZBC. And then the new government in 1980, under the former president, Robert Mugabe, at that time he was the prime minister, invited the BBC to come over and study the situation at ZBC at independence, with a view to recommending how ZBC can be transformed. It was not really the reforms that affected private players and so forth. It was the ZBC. So you'll find that at that time, the BBC team that came at independence in Zimbabwe at the invitation of Mr. Mugabe transformed ZBC to almost, you know, a mini BBC. You know, you then had radio stations being increased to four, and you had the new names of these radio stations like Radio 1, Radio 2, Radio 3, and Radio 4. And these are the names that one would also find at the BBC, as I later found out when I went to study radio at BBC radio training, that our titles, you know, our radio stations, our format of programming was all modeled on the BBC lines because of the recommendations of that team which came to Zimbabwe at the invitation of Mr. Mugabe, which made recommendations as to how it will be structured. So the former African service became Radio 2, and it was still focusing, you know, on the majority of audiences who spoke in the national languages of Shona and Ndebele. And then radio, the general service, or the European service, as it was known, you know, was now focusing on English programming, but not necessarily, you know, for white people, but for people who chose, you know, to listen to programs in English. Because the former European service, it was the European service, because you were meant to listen to it and feel as if you were in England. So even the type of programming, most of them were, you know, sort of bringing those memories of during our time in England before we came to Rhodesia. That was the kind of programming you'd get. But then at independence, after this restructuring, what then happened was that it was then transformed to a station for people who chose to listen to programs in English. Then there was a new edition, which was called Radio 3 for the youth, Because there was really nothing for the youth at the time, and most of the youth were listening to radio stations in neighboring countries, like the LM Radio, Radio 5, you know, and so forth. So it was felt that let's have a radio for the youth so that they don't have to listen, you know, on shortwave or on medium wave to stations beaming from Mozambique, like LM Radio, and then Radio 5, I think, it was beaming from South Africa, as well as Swazi Music Radio, because you could get those in Zimbabwe. Then later in the years, you know, of our early days of independence, you know, then advocacy began. You know, instead of focusing mainly on just, you know, increasing stations on of ZBC, you know, organizations like the Media Institute of Southern Africa were then lobbying, you know, Parliament especially, to say we need to change legislation, we need to break the ZBC monopoly so that we have other players, you know, in radio, because I'm focusing here on radio since we're at radio days. But this also affected even newspapers, it affected television. Right now, as I speak, we still have one television channel in Zimbabwe. So besides the DSTV, it's really one television channel. So that's when, you know, people began to understand that there's no diversity, even if ZBC has increased its radio stations to 4 or 5, because later on they increased it to 5. They had another one broadcasting on shortwave. But what was also important was to make it a true public broadcaster, you know, and transform from a state-controlled broadcaster, and also to have other players, you know, from the private sector. So this needed, you know, a review of the, or a reform of legislation. And the Broadcasting Services Act of 1957, its monopoly of ZBC's monopoly through that act, was broken by a radio station which just took advantage, you know, of the fact that nothing had changed. It was called Capital Radio. So they started broadcasting, you know, and government moved in to shut down that station, Capital Radio. But, you know, it set, you know, the tone rolling, because what then happened, some broadcasting guidelines were then, you know, released, and then steps towards coming up with the Broadcasting Services Act, the current Broadcasting Services Act, came into play. And there are still some issues, of course, with the Broadcasting Services Act, because you know, gives power to the minister to appoint the Broadcasting Authority, and also the Broadcasting Authority does not immediately license stations, you know, on a regular basis, but it can take quite some time before making any calls, you know, for radio stations or potential radio stations to apply for licenses. So when the regulations came out and then the Broadcasting Services Act was enacted, we thought within a few years we'd have truly private radio stations, but it took quite some time. And this gave rise to the proliferation of some alternative media, which by and large was described by government as pirate radio stations. So this procrastination brought about alternative media that was broadcasting, you know, on other platforms like shortwave, and then later on social media, on satellite television and so forth. I think you have heard about Radio Voice of the People, the one that I work for as the executive director, which was broadcasting on shortwave for quite some time using the transmitters of Radio Netherlands, and that was a business deal because we were paying for those transmitters. I think you have heard of VOA Studio 7, which is still broadcasting on shortwave and medium wave at the moment. Those are stations that came about in order to close this gap, because back home, the stations that were there were really, you know, state-controlled stations, as it were. Then you also had quite a number of stations also broadcasting online. These stations that I'm talking about also went online and went on satellite television. And also, the community radio station initiatives also grouped together to ensure that they also ready themselves for being licensed, and they came under the banner of what is called the Zimbabwe Association of Community Radio Stations, ZACRAS, and they prepared themselves, understanding what communities were all about, and being learning from other best practices from different parts of the world. But until now, not a single community radio station has been licensed in Zimbabwe, unlike the situation we find in neighboring countries like South Africa, quite a lot of them. I don't know, I've lost count now, I think they are over 150, aren't they? They are now 300 under the National Community Radio Forum. And then in Zambia, they are also doing well. In Mozambique, they are doing well. I think Botswana as well. But it's Zimbabwe and Eswatini at the moment, I think, which they do not have community radio stations. So these initiatives have also been yearning for being licensed. Now, there came what we, you know, have often described as cosmetic legislative changes, you know, that brought about some of the new stations, which is a very good idea in terms of plurality, in that, you know, we no longer talk of ZB stations only, but we now have quite a number of stations. But why are we still talking then about media reforms when we have all these radio stations that have been licensed? Radio stations still belong to some parastatals of government, still belong to influential people in the ruling party. And so this is why, even at this point in time, we are still talking about these reforms that I'm going to delve deeper into a later stage. So that statutory instrument that I talked about, as I said, it paved the way for the Broadcasting Services Act, and then, like I said, it gave excessive powers to the minister, especially on the composition of the bars, because people preferred that those going on the bars, like what is happening, have to be, like what happens in the press, have to be interviewed publicly, so that, you know, their profiles are known and so forth, rather than just being appointed. And then local content expectations were still new, but I think many people have now embraced them. That is, it is important for radio stations in a country to delve much more on local content than only depending on foreign content. And then there was a call, the first call for radio licenses in 2005, and very few, you know, responded to that. It was very short. My station responded to that, and I think we're probably the first to submit our application, and the deadline was extended because others had not done so. So others in between had to register, and then when the call ended, none of us was invited for interviews by the Broadcasting Authority, except one television channel called Munumutape African Broadcasting. And, but of course, they were not granted a license. So that was the first call. And this call for radio licenses, or the yearning for radio licenses, went on until we had, I think you all remember that in Zimbabwe, you know, due to our political problems, we had a government of national unity between the ruling, the now ruling party, which was has been ruling since independence, ZANU-PF, and the Movement for Democratic Changes. After there had been some disputes in the election, and President Thabo Mbeki and later on President Zuma, you know, were mediators in that you know, process. And that process also made mention, you know, of reforms in the media. And with regard to radio, there was a clause that called on all those radio stations which were broadcasting from neighboring countries as well as abroad to come back home and apply for radio licenses. So you can imagine there was a lot of excitement that, you know, people were then coming back home. They're no longer going to be broadcasting on shortwave, on medium wave, which are very difficult really to access. And they're going to also be applying for radio licenses. So in the process, BARS made a call for broadcasting licenses, and the number of players responded to that, and even my radio station was also invited for interviews together with other radio stations. One belonged to Zimbabwe Newspapers 1980 Private Limited, which is Zim Papers, which really falls under under government. And then the other was by a prominent journalist who is a member of parliament in the ruling party and also became a minister. And then other private players like Kiss FM, which brought in the late music superstar Oliver Mtukudzi, some bankers and former broadcasters in Zimbabwe who are now operating from Zimbabwe. So you can see that there was that excitement due to those reforms that were taking place. But unfortunately, they were only looking for two. Unfortunately for us, we did not get that license. It was got by Zim Papers as well as the gentleman. I also shared a platform with him here at Radio Days a few years ago, just about the time when he had been granted his license. So those are the stations which then took the national free-to-air commercial space in the name of Star FM from Zim Papers, as well as ZFM from what is known as AB Communication. But as time went on, when more calls for licenses were made, especially for the local commercial radio licenses, which are at times mixed up with community radio stations, there's a difference there. These are just like regional stations in different cities. So not many applicants as expected, because really in most of the smaller towns there are no businesses that could have sustained a commercial radio station. So we also threw in an application. We're not successful, and other players came on board. I think I remember a player called Alpha Media, were owned by Trevor Ncube, who also has some business interests here in South Africa. They also put in some applications, and the applications, most of them went to Zim Papers again and AB Communication. So as we speak right now, in Zimbabwe or in Harare, we have Star FM, which belongs to Zim Papers. And then you go to a city called Mutare, we've got Diamond FM, it also belongs to Zim Papers. And we also have Capital, and which was headed by my colleague here, Napoleon Nyani, for some time. I think you established it, isn't it? Yes, he actually moved from Star FM to establish Capital. The license had been obtained by a book company publishing, actually a book selling company called Kingstones, which also belonged to Zim Papers. But then, that license ended up belonging to Zim Papers, and is still a question mark as to how that happened. But however, it helped to establish Capital, which is a talk radio based in Harare, dealing mainly with issues to do with the capital. So, and then the other stations, like I said, they belong to ZFM. You find them in Masingo. You also find one in Gweru, I think. Then you had another one which belonged at that time. It was associated with the former Minister of Information, Professor Jonathan Moyo, which is in Bulawayo. That's Sky's Metro. It's broadcasting right now, isn't it? And then they also have another one in Victoria Falls. Yeah. Then the other minister, Opetpof, also with some broadcasting colleagues, applied for one, but they were not successful. And the reasons usually given in some of these cases that although he belonged to the establishment, probably he belonged to a wrong faction, as it were, because also factionalism plays a very important role in some of these decisions. So these are some of the things that have happened. Then community broadcasting, every year they are promised, we are looking into your issue in the next 100 days. We are looking into your issue, and ministers are changed and so forth. They pretend that they've never heard about the story. Tell me, what is it that you want? No, but the other minister, we had a meeting 2 months ago. So it's always, over and over again, and you don't get anything conclusive. So this is why we are still yearning for those resources. I forgot to mention another station, which is in a mining area called Zishavani. It's called YFM. It's owned by a former Director General of the Zimbabwe Broadcasting Corporation, Nyaradzi Wengwere. Now, Let's look at some of the signals, some of the things that may indicate to us that really, in terms of editorial policy, you know, some of these stations really struggle, you know, to be open. They really struggle to move away, you know, from their state control or from their hidden state control and so forth. The change of government that took place in November 2017, you'll be surprised that that story was never told in Zimbabwe. Zimbabweans never heard that story from Zimbabwean radio stations. If they did, they were just doing that as an afterthought, because those who really told the story were the BBC, ENCA, and to some extent SABC, and I've forgotten some of the other stations. Last year, I was appointed as the spokesperson of the Halema Mokhlanthe Commission of Inquiry into August 1 shootings that took place in Harare, resulting in the death of 6 people. You know, and as we're trying to look for audios, as we're trying to look for, you know, video footage, and anything that would assist the commission in order to find evidence as to who exactly shot those 6 people, six people, you know, you could not get that evidence from any, you know, radio station. You could not get that evidence from the television station. And we had even to ask the government through the Ministry of Information to make an appeal to international media. So they did put up that appeal to the international media to say, please help us if you have got the footage, you know, of, you know, what happened on the 1st of August, because this was a day after the end of the elections, and people were demonstrating about the delay in the announcement of some results, and it resulted in the police and the army going onto the streets and ended up with the shooting of these 6 people. So as the spokesperson, I was responsible for getting in touch with all these other stations internationally. And the footage that was used by the commission, most of it came from ENCA, because ENCA really were live in Harare most of the time, and the BBC, you know. So at least, you know, the footage that we got was from outside the country and not from inside. So these are some of the examples that I'm trying to put across to say, you know, when you have these stations, they are very careful not to say much about the owner, because they'll be in trouble. You'll burn your hands, you know, you get fired, you know, because of that. So there was also the internet shut down because of the demonstrations that took place because of the rising cost of living. Again, these stations were silent. If anything, they can only broadcast about, you know, instigation by the opposition parties and civil society and so forth. But where government has faltered, they will not say much, as it were. So this is why we're still saying, no, we need diversity. We need professionalism. We need to talk about these things. We need to look at both sides, you know, of the coin, as demanded by our profession. But it's very difficult, you know, at times, you know, when it affects your honor, to be very critical in some instances. And you also hear of some, you know, silent instructions being given that be careful as to who you invite to your programs, be careful about what you report about, and so forth. So, resultantly, you also find that there will be very little reportage about not the whole story of what will be going on. Just going back to the change of government in 2017, you will recall, I think most of you were following events in Zimbabwe, you will recall that the army, you know, under the current vice president, you know, they held a meeting just to talk about some of the things that they were concerned about, where they felt that the former president was not really following the constitution, and there was seemingly an influence coming from the former first lady and so forth. So that meeting was well publicized on social media, you know, and not on any ZBC channel. The meeting of the general was on social media. It was only publicized on ZBC channels after, you know, there'd been a new government. That's when that footage, I think they even to ask for that footage from Sly Media, which is the one which actually broadcast live the event, you know, when General Chiwenga was addressing the army officers about why they were concerned about the situation in the country at that time. So you can see why there's been, you know, need for all these reforms. I also mentioned there the internet shutdown, that there was really nothing much coming out of the stations. What would come out is maybe a day later, when they have studied the situation and feel that, you know, they are in a safe zone and they can talk about that. But while it's happening, you know, you listen to the station, you watch TV, you know, there will be something different. Like on the night, you know, all of us were kept awake on the, was it the 15th or 17th of November? 15th of November. We were all awake when we heard that the army was going to issue a statement. You know, and we, it was coming out on social media. But, you know, there was nothing to indicate that something of that sort was going to happen on ZBC until very early in the morning, where we saw the man in uniform saying that Zimbabwe had moved to another level. I think all of us are well aware of that footage. That's when we also saw the footage, you know, that we had not seen on national television, also being repeated you know, continuously and so forth. So the internet shutdown, the events of 15 November, and then the cost of living related demonstrations, blame on the opposition, civic society, and so forth, and not much. Very late statements coming officially from the government. And then I've also alluded to the August 1 shootings, and again, blame on the opposition and the civil society. And then critical voices generally silenced. Some of these things, maybe they may not have verification, but you'll find that there are certain voices who are not favorites at such times, you know, whereas in a reformed environment, people should be invited and actually taken to task about their views, you know, bring them together with those who have got divergent views, and then the people will make their own choice as to what to follow. So I was just giving you the background that this issue of media reforms in Zimbabwe is not a new issue at all. Quite a number of things that I've tried to explain to give you, you know, an overall picture have happened. Now, it is important for now to understand what exactly we want as media. What are the expectations? And how have these expectations been coming about? Mind you, in the past few months, few years, after all these changes that I talked about, these were being dismissed. You know, calls coming from media advocacy groups like the Media Institute of Southern Africa, coming from the Media Alliance of Zimbabwe, were being dismissed. But the new dispensation, you know, the new government, they said, no, we are committed to media reforms. And I think before independence, our president, President Edim Nangagwa, did mention that, you know, after our elections, we really need to look at media reforms. And the media fraternity, including the radio sector, has welcomed those. And what is important now is to put across what exactly do we want. Because at times, there's a tendency of just saying, no, because it has come from government, therefore it's no good and so forth. But, you know, what we're urging ourselves through our membership organizations is to ensure that, you know, we participate in these things. We fully understand. And guided by some of these organizations who bring different people, who talk about best practice, who talk about legislation, experiences in other countries, we then have to understand what's going on. So, it's a bit small, but we look at governance. On governance, we say the provisions of the Broadcasting Services Act and the ZBC Act should be amended, particularly to ensure board appointment processes are consistent with gender parity provided under the Constitution, and licensing of radio stations should not be male-dominated. So some, you know, CSOs and media advocates have said that has to be ensured. We don't want a board, you know, of a public broadcaster that is just staffed, you know, by partisan people. So that's why there have always been calls for interviewing these boards publicly. Then The process itself must be transparent. The previous processes, including the constitutional reforms, were usually attacked because they involved political parties only. You know, like the last constitution, there are other groups which did not participate because they said, no, this is a political process between ZANU-PF and the MDC. We want a process that is inclusive, that also includes civil society organizations, churches, and so forth. So transparency in this process has really been called for. And time and time again, the media has been writing about that process so that media is also included to allow public participation and parliamentary oversight. And then there's also the ZBC Act, which must be amended to insulate the editorial independence of the ZBC to be really public. And this is usually shown during the elections, whereby you can see some bias. You know, I watch, you know, election, you know, broadcasting in South Africa, in the UK, and in America, where you see, you know, different players openly participating, you know, even in live broadcasts and so forth. But, you know, this is not the kind of experience that we have, especially on the public broadcaster. And so on governance, there's that call. Then on community broadcasting, like I said, right up to now, we don't have any community radio stations. Unfortunately, in some circles, some people were saying these local commercial radio stations are community broadcasting stations. And it is through the advocacy groups like ZAKRAS, MISA, and so forth, that the record has been set straight that those ones have not been established as community radio stations, but they are local, commercial, or regional stations. So let's not confuse issues, because at one time, some officials in government were saying, no, look here, we already have commercial stations in Bulawayo, in Zishavane, in Mtare, and so forth. So the advocacy groups have put that in place, and I also listened to government officials like a permanent secretary actually saying, yes, we allow community stations to be established. That he said when I was attending World Radio Day this year. So it was a welcome relief to broadcasters. So a licensing framework for community broadcasting, especially community radio stations, should be developed and implemented. That is very important. You know, for quite some time, you know, as we're discussing these reforms, there was a lot of, you know, backwards and forth discussion about what is a community. You know, describing a community became an issue. And yet there are set standards, there are best practices that would define a community. So again, I think that has been put to rest, and we'll be able to, you know, to have community radio stations licensed without any problem. And then international best practices, like I said, you know, from your own experience here, the National Community Radio Forum, from AMAC, you know, the World Association of Community Radio Stations, I think they have put together some documentation that can help those people who will be going into those processes. And then government should allocate some funds for community radio development. I think it's an example from here. In South Africa, I think the Department of Communication has been helping community radio for quite some time. And I know your MDDA, the Media Development and Diversity Agency, has been, you know, helping set up these stations. And then later on, they stand on their own. I happen to have worked with quite a number of community radio stations, and at one time my station was briefly in exile. Not that I didn't go into exile myself, I would just come here almost every month, but I had staff working from here, and we were assisted by Bush Radio. We worked from Bush Radio in Cape Town for quite some time before we moved to our own premises. Then even when we came here, our offices were just around the corner at the Media Park there. So we were there for quite some time, you know. So now, when we only went back during the government of national unity as an entity in order to apply for a license. And like I said, we applied 3 times and we were not successful in our applications. Although we believe and we are convinced that we put up very strong points, but I think our history was not attractive enough to ensure that we obtain these licenses. And then on licensing, the Broadcasting Services Act should be amended to allow the regulator bars to specify when applications should be called for. Like I said, bars can go on for 5 years without calling for licenses. And the broadcasters are saying, no, that time is too long. Because time every year, there are new players wanting to come on board. So bars should do that more regularly than what they've been doing. And then cross-ownership should be limited. I think that's another call that has been made. Cross-ownership, I did mention that the stations that we have at the moment are coming from newspaper organizations, the same newspaper organization and the same entrepreneur. So I think here the call really is for more players to be involved in all this. So these are some of the key expectations. And these key expectations came from an inquiry that took place. You know, the government set up what was called the, it wasn't the Commission of Inquiry. Napoleon just give me the, I'll remember what it was. But it was an inquiry, when you remember, please tell me. It was an inquiry that was made in order to find out exactly what people, ordinary people in different parts of the country wanted as far as media reforms were concerned. So this is the section that I extracted from the IMPI report. It was actually, you know, presented like this. They actually had these subheadings. On governance, this is what we expect. On community broadcasting, this is what we expect. And on licensing, this is what is expected. Yes. Yes. So it was nothing to do with fighting. It was nothing to do with war, as the name implies, IMPI. But it was to do with, Napoleon? Yeah. And it constituted some senior journalists. You know, it was headed by a colleague who has been in journalism for quite some time, Jeffrey Nyarota. And most editors in the papers, private and public papers, were part of that commission of inquiry. Napoleon, were you part of it? Eh? Okay. So they went round the country, you know, having some roadshows, going to halls, you know, gathering people, asking, what do you think about radio? What type of radio do you want in future? And then there was a yearning for community radio because there had been a lot of advocacy. How about newspapers? You know, what do you think of the ZBC? And all those things were recorded into a voluminous a book by the IMPI or the... Yes, right. So let's see. Honesty and transparency, please. Now, this is what is coming from the civil society organizations. You know, we are very active. Let me just mention them by name. Those who have really, you know, been putting the broadcasting reforms on the agenda. You know, even the initiatives by ZACRAS, the Zimbabwe Association of Community Radio Stations, actually started at the Media Institute of Southern Africa, MISA. They are a baby of MISA, but they were weaned out and they are now standing on their own. So MISA started publishing books, you know, critiquing, you know, the Broadcasting Act. This is good. No, this is not good. We recommend this. This is good. We don't think this is good. We recommend this. So this is how people became aware. And they also made sure that they involved parliamentarians. But of course, you know, with the turnover at Parliament, each time you have new parliamentarians, it's like you are starting afresh. Only a month ago, I was invited to make a presentation about the future of community radio to parliamentarians. These were totally new. But yet I know I've addressed similar gatherings in the past. So, you know, you're always doing it again and again to make sure that those who are there, you're leaving. Okay, so to make sure that those who are there fully understand what's going on. So the most of this I extracted from an amalgamation or an association of media CSOs, which is called the Media Alliance of Zimbabwe, MAZ. It includes the MISA that I've mentioned, it includes ZACRAS, it includes the Zimbabwe National Editors Forum, it includes as well the Voluntary Media Council of Zimbabwe and others I may have not mentioned. So they have been representing the media. They also have been calling for workshops so that they conscientize media, particularly you know, those in radio, especially on the Zakra side, so that they fully understand, you know, what's going on, and so that they can also put across their suggestions and not cry foul, because people have a tendency of crying foul when they have not been participating in anything. I think we take leave from Brexit. I think during Brexit, people were not serious even in their voting. So it has put them in a mess, because now they are serious. They are now looking at issues. I was following the voting patterns during the time. They were very low. But there's no serious discussion, because it has got serious implications. So this is what we do as human beings. We should participate in these things. And back home, we are always being urged as radio broadcasters that your views must be known, read widely, attend different conferences, understand what is good for you, make them known to the relevant people. Don't just discuss them in taxis, in lifts without putting them across. So these organizations must put across this expeditious and genuinely reform the country's media laws in a process that is transparent and inclusive. So they've been really following and also urging the media to write about it. And then the media, the country's media, particularly the broadcasting sector, must be opened up to genuinely independent and community-based initiatives. So, because there was also talk that government was also trying, you know, to influence the formation of community radio stations. And the media advocates groups are saying, no, let the communities themselves form these stations. They should not be controlled by government. They should not, have government influence except advocacy, just to say what is a community radio, what is good for the community. But that, again, has to be done by advocacy group, and government departments are not in a position, should not be in a position to be the ones spearheading that. And then government should address the sustainability challenges. I think I've already talked especially about the community radio sector. But that also includes the media in general. I think all of you, whether you'll agree with me, I don't know, maybe you're vibrant here in South Africa. You've got lots of money, lots of advertising. But back home, we're really struggling. I don't know how you're doing, Napoleon, on Capitol. You're cushioned at least by Zim Papers. I could see your reports, you know, that Zim Papers made so much, and their loss went to radio stations and so forth. So I hope by the time you left, you were making money. We're breaking even. Yeah, well, the young people are really doing well, you know, with these new stations. We're really excited about these new stations, except that they can be more diversity. As you can see, they're led by very young people and so forth. But of course, at times they get their fingers bent because of the enthusiasm that they have. But by and large, they've really brought about some plurality, although we're still yearning for diversity. So sustainability, I don't know. May I ask you, are we all sustainable in our country? We're all getting money, we're getting money. Yeah, from government. Yes, but from advertising. You know, our industry is dead back home. And I'm sure you're reading a lot about our currency, you know, and so forth. So we really have sustainability problems. So in a way, in the Broadcasting Act, there's provision for the establishment of a broadcasting fund, but I really have not heard any report about that fund, or I've not even heard about who benefited from that fund. I don't think it even exists. No, because such a fund should then help, not that it will carry you forever, but just to help establish, and then you see it through on your own. There's a digitization which is taking place. At times it's stalled because of funding problems. Again, it will bring a lot of opportunities in the radio and television sector, and there again the media advocacy groups have been, you know, lobbying and advocating for growth in the radio sector when the digitization takes place. And then like I said, all stakeholders are urged to play their active part in the reform process that is taking place. So it's actually taking place now, and we are all urged to participate, to make sure that we're active players in that, so that we don't cry foul. So I think, ladies and gentlemen, I've been talking for quite some time. What is it, in some of you came a little bit late, that I was talking about? I was giving the historical background of the media reform process with emphasis on the growth and development of radio in Zimbabwe from pre-colonial, pre-independence times up to the present day. And fortunately, I've been a player since 1974 when I joined broadcasting. So I would imagine, Jonathan, I was speaking with authority because I've seen both sides of the coin. So I gave that historical background as to what was being changed, what existed before independence, and then what was changed at independence, not as a matter of legislation, but as a matter of policy, by the new government, and then how, advocacy then started, looking at legislation so that some of these things would be changed through proper legislation, like repealing the Broadcasting Services Act. Then I went on to talk about, the advocacy for licensing, the Government of National Unity and what came through it, the stations that were licensed, starting with the national commercial radio stations and then the local regional radio stations, but still no community radio stations, and how now within the current reform process we are saying community radios should also be included. I enjoyed the session yesterday where someone just came up with a question that, do we really need them? I wish Zakra's members were here. They were going to skin him alive. Because they're so passionate about these community radio stations. So then I also looked at how those who have been licensed have performed, which conclusively means that they are plural, but they are not diverse. We still need more diversity. We welcome the changes that have taken place, very good programs really coming out of them, but there are certain sticky issues that still need to be addressed. And also we need other private players, real private players, not only those linked with the state. And then I also talked about the expectations that came out of the IMPI panel of inquiry, as well as what the Media Alliance, which brings together the media and CSOs, has also been calling for. So, in a nutshell, this is what is happening in Zimbabwe. I don't know whether there are other examples in other parts of Africa or the world where the reform process in broadcasting has taken such a long time. But this is where we are at the moment, and we really hope that there's going to be transparency and there's going to be honesty and truthfulness so that we really end up with a really diversified environment rather than just a lot of stations saying the same thing with the same editorial policy, afraid to do certain things and so forth. So I think there's 5 minutes left. If there are any, I'll leave that to you. Yes.
I think there's just 5 minutes left, and thank you so much to Ntate John Masuku for the presentation. Ladies and gentlemen, if there are any questions, please, we've got 5 minutes to take through the question. This microphone is short. I saw it yesterday. The cable. Will you be able? You're a broadcaster, sir. All right.
Hello. Yes. Good morning, colleagues. My name is Maurice. I'm from China Africa, SABC. Mr. Masuku, you have mentioned something about the broadcasters, Zimbabwean broadcasters residing outside Zimbabwe. Now, my question is on that. How effective are the Zimbabwe radio broadcasters that are transmitting from outside Zimbabwe? And you have mentioned those who are doing so through the shortwave and AM. I think there's another program that is coming from Voice of America. So how effective are they in Zimbabwe? What I just need to find out to test is there still an appetite for AM and shortwave radio in Zimbabwe? I think basically that's my question. Sure.
There's a lot of appetite for that. You know, where you are missing news, where things are happening and you are not told, you tend to look around as to who can tell you the news. I remember I told you about the situation at the change of government, that not very, in fact, nothing was being said inside the country. you know, the broadcasters inside the country were also confused, you know. And you know that most of them were aligned to the previous government. So they were very quiet about it. But we did not miss that news. It came from these stations that you're talking about. So people would look around, even if they didn't have a shortwave radio, I think they bought it that time. And people still do access a shortwave, especially in the rural areas. And I can tell you, VOA Studio 7 is very, very popular because its reach is far and wide. I know in terms of the Zimbabwe All Media Product Surveys, which have got an urban bias, they may have low figures, but just talk to any elderly person, you know, who resides in the rural areas, including some young people. They are well informed politically, most probably more well informed than some of us who live in the cities, because they access these stations on shortwave, on medium wave, particularly VOA Studio 7, because, you know, it uses so many frequencies as well as medium wave, which is not very far from FM. Of course, FM is much clearer and so forth. But medium wave is very easy to access. You can access it, close it today, and tomorrow you open your radio, it's still on the same band. Whereas with shortwave, you have to start looking for it again. But I can tell you that so many people access these stations. The figures may not be all that high, but they've informed and educated a lot of Zimbabweans about what is going on. And then the free-to-air side, we also, I didn't mention that, as a consortium of these alternative media, we also formed what was called Channel Zim, which was broadcasting on satellite television. Not on those radio stations that are on satellite, but we're actually on TV, and we had pictures, but of course our signal was audio. And I can tell you it was really coming up. It was based here at the old radio VOP offices in Mill Park, but it only lasted for about 3 years. But again, because of funding constraints, we ended up closing it. But we were building up some audiences. Nowadays, Channel Africa, I'm sure you also do the same. You know, you want to find yourself in so many platforms so that people can follow you. And Zimbabweans will always get those platforms.
Morning, everyone. My name is Bolani. I'm a content producer at UJFM. I just want to find out, Uncle, you said radio is not doing well currently in Zimbabwe, right? So I just want to find out, it's not exactly doing well in Zim, right? Yeah. Oh, I might have misunderstood, but the question is, what does, in your view, what does the future of radio look like from a revenue point of view? Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Yes, you're right. Sustainability is a real problem. For those new radio stations, Naboli, if you can come closer. For those new radio stations, you know, just an overview of how they've performed. You've been a manager at two new radio stations. Yeah. Just an overview.
Okay, my name is Napoleon Nyani. I was a programming manager for Star FM, which is the biggest urban radio station in Zimbabwe. It's a commercial station. And then I moved to Capitalk FM, which is a talk station. So Star FM was a national station. Capitalk FM is a local commercial radio station. For Star FM, it was a little easier because it's national. So in terms of advertising spend, advertisers were more inclined towards the national stations, and it was new because it was the first commercial station to be licensed after the ZBC, which had a monopoly for about 32 years, and then Star FM was the first to be commercially licensed. So advertisers were excited about that. So up until now, they still like that radio station. Now, when it comes to local commercial radio stations, which are regional, the one that I was managing was only for Harare. Therein lies the real problem, because there is a limited reach, so advertisers are not really keen. They're saying, well, if I can go to the two national commercial stations, which is Star FM and ZFM, I'll still get to reach the Harare people anyway, so why come to the Harare radio station? So the local stations are really struggling when it comes to getting advertising dollars. It's also because the industry is not doing well, like Wamasuku said. And it means that if industry is not doing well, the advertising cake is smaller and smaller. And it continues to grow smaller and smaller with the increasing number of radio stations. So it's a challenge. Yes.
Well, you heard it from the horse's mouth. It's just from there. my view is from, you know, funded media, you know, the one that relies on fundraising at the moment. So what Napoleon was giving you as an example is the real situation on the ground, but of course with regards to the stations that he was heading. So I'd like to thank you very much, moderator, for giving me this opportunity.
Okay. Our tea break has been pushed back with 5 minutes, so I can take two more questions and then we'll wrap up. Is that okay? All right.
Hi, my name is Madison from the First Radio Academy. I just have two questions. The first being, with all the challenges that you have been facing, how would you like South African media to assist you, the government as well, activist groups, etc.? What is it that you would like to see pragmatically being done to help the situation in Zimbabwe? And then you also spoke about the silencing of people who are critical of the government. What actually does happen to them if you do decide that you're actually going to go against their policies of you not speaking your mind and choosing to invite certain people whom they don't necessarily agree with? And are there activist groups that are trying to work against that, and what exactly are they doing?
Please remind me if I skip some of them. I think the one that I got first was how South African media can assist. And I can tell you, our being here, you know, for almost 9 years before we moved to Zimbabwe was assistance from South African space, because we were able to operate at Bush Radio without any problem. We registered ourselves here without any problem. We moved from Bush Radio to other places near Parliament. We moved to Long Street, the famous Long Street. We had an office there. Yeah. Then we came back here to Mill Park. We operated Radio VOP. We operated Channel Zim without any problem. That was great assistance. We also have attended a number of such conferences where our networking has increased, where we've also understood best practices in other countries. Like I said, I've attended Radio Days from inception, when it was still called Radio Days in Johannesburg or Radio Days in Jozi. I remember I attended the very first meeting here. And from those meetings, we learned quite a lot. From the meetings happening at Highway Africa in Grahamstown, we also learned a lot about media. Even the kind of media, alternative media, that we have been pushing, also we learned quite a lot from there. And even some of our journalists, you know, including myself, I'm an alumni of Stellenbosch University. We also were educated here, and that again is a plus, you know, to your media and your media training institutions. IAJ has also taken us for a number of courses. I know he also trained here at the Wits Radio Academy. You know, that's why, young as he is, you know, he was catapulted to be a manager. But of course, answering your other question, because you know, he brought in and what would have been called undesirable. That's why he's no longer there. you know, that's what happens. And you know, as a young man, he still has you know, a lot of space to go. But these are some of the things. Some of them are not made public, but you know, you just hear from the corridors that no. Some of us, you know, at times we are interviewed and we never hear those interviews. Times you know, you are filmed, you know, at a session like this, but when you watch news, you are nowhere in the news bulletin. So these are some of the things that happen. And when you ask, like I remember about 2 weeks ago, the minister and the permanent secretary were asked in parliament about some of these things, and they professed ignorance, that they don't know that any people are denied. And what can you do with them if they say they don't know? Or even if the ZBC says, no, we don't have any problem, we take everyone. You know, you can take it up over and over again, but that's the situation. I don't know whether I've forgotten your fifth question. Yeah, like the one that I gave reference to. Yeah, that if you say something controversial, you may find yourself not being invited to the next program. Yes. No, this one.
Thank you very much. My name is Clifford, and my question, I must say I'm worried that the communities don't have radio stations because of the licensing problem. But the question would be, since we are now digital, is digital platforms or online radio stations allowed? But is it allowed in Zimbabwe, online radio station?
Yes, the people already we already have online radio stations. Even some of our stations, you know, we do podcasting. You know, people are getting most of this signal. Some of these interviews, you know, some whole programs and so forth from individuals who are just creative and coming up with some programming. Some of it, of course, is fake news. There are lots of fake news. You have to be very careful about some of these things. But quite a number of, I will tell you that there are quite a number of breaking news that has been broken by, you know, digital media. You know, where you, like I told you about the, you know, when the army, you know, addressed about their concerns on the constitution. That was first broadcast by Sly Media on social networks, and the ZBC only broadcast it after the government had changed.